Hi, and welcome to the 2012 edition of the Top 10 Most Influential Albums. This is not about what the best releases of last year was. It's more about, in the past year, what spent the most time in your player? What made you think the most? What did you really enjoy in the past year? By passing along these suggestions, I get turned on to a lot of good new music that I wouldn't know otherwise, so please respond. Drop a line at dave@davehartle.com. I'll take your answers, append them to the docs, and then repost them. You can go back and see any of the past years, going back to 1998. Without further ado, let's go on. Number one for the year is the Mars Volta Nocturnicate. Several years ago, I was channel surfing and was stopped dead in my tracks by a group performing on the Henry Rollins Show. They were on some music station I never normally watch, but here's this group. They had a singer with the intensity and approach of a Robert Plant, but with a better quality tone. They had a guitarist playing just impossible stuff and twitching like he wasn't grounded properly. A manic drummer, and among other personnel, a person with a mini Moog making really odd, violent electronic noises. The rhythms piled on top of each other like three Captain Beefheart tracks played simultaneously, but somehow it all worked together. It was my first exposure to the Mars Volta, an offshoot band of an old band called At the Drive-In, and masterminded by vocalist Cedric Bixler Zavala and guitarist Omar Rodriguez Lopez. Since then, I've picked up on the seven albums that they've released so far, one live, one in six studio. Everyone's been challenging in their own way, but I think this one's the best they've done so far. Miles bought an Ibanez guitar designed by Omar and saw them at the Electric Factory one night. All this input pretty much convinced me that pop music can still reach the edge and succeed brilliantly. This is their latest release, pretty much put together by Omar and then handed over to Cedric to see what he would do with it. They have a new drummer. Oh my god. Drumbo lives. This cat's like a human drum machine with a random algorithm pattern stored in him. Apparently Omar gave him the drum machine tracks and he just spit them back out. And Omar said the only time they did a second take was when he just couldn't believe what he just heard and had to see if the guy could do it again. Over these angular rhythms, they fit weird dissonant soundscapes and soaring heroic melodies that sometimes sounds like your disc player is somehow playing multiple tracks at once, but all in sync. There's really no describing this music. You have to hear it, and it'll take you at least five hearings before it starts to make sense. It's like Led Zeppelin meets Captain Beefheart moves into the 21st century. And despite it being difficult stuff, I stick it at number one this year for its sheer audaciousness. Brilliant and thought-provoking stuff. My number two choice for the year is one you probably haven't heard. It's an album called Broken Earth, and the act is Red. My friend Bob Kimmel is a drummer and an engineer. Grounded a lot of dance bands, ran a studio in Atlantic City before I left the area in 1995. He's kept it up, but I knew one of his projects was a band called Red, helmed by a singer-songwriter named Andy Schley. Last spring, he sent out a general email notice, sort of announcing a new release. He sent me a Christmas card every year for 20 years. I've always enjoyed his playing. He engineered the last live session I did in preparation of my next CD project, and he's been a real friend over the years, so I figured it's about time I bought his CD, sat down, listened to it, and see what he was up to. So I went over to CD Baby, which is also my distributor of choice, and bought the disc and arrived a couple days later. And I had one of the pleasantest surprises I've had in years from it. Everyone I play it for really likes it and feels it's a great hybrid between British pop of decades past and sort of modern sensibilities. The production is top-notch. This doesn't sound like a local Jersey act doing it on his own in a studio at all. It's really well produced without being intrusive to the material, but using effects to give a hint of psychedelia to the proceedings, never obscuring the lyrics. Andy Schley does it all himself, all the different instruments and vocals, with help on drums by Bob, female vocals by Patty Balbo, another Atlantic City vocalist, and some help on bass by friends of mine from the Jersey Shore. Every time my shuffle function finds one of the tracks on this album, I stop and say, who the hell is this? And I'm always surprised to see Red on the playlist. The music sounds like other groups. I always think it's somebody else. It sounds like other groups, but it's got its own character. Once I know it's Red, I go, of course, it's him. It's revealing that the only cover on the two discs is the Beatles' Help, and it fits right into it. It's a real nice reimagining of the thing, and the music really does have a character all its own. Mr. Schley, I don't know who you are, but I really would like to meet you. This is a really good album, and I'm just really impressed with it. Bob Kimmel, congrats on being an integral part of this, and thanks for letting me know about it. All I know is that Red deserves a whole lot more exposure and success, but I'm afraid he's playing music too thoughtful and eclectic for the bland mass market that has no really slot to pigeonhole him into. When I play this for people without saying what it is, no one can guess that it's basically a one-man show from a local artist in South Jersey. Do yourself a favor and give this a listen. This is power pop for intelligent adults, and that's one of the rarest forms of music extant today. Number 3, Donald Fagen's Sunken Condos. Okay, this is a predictable choice for me. I've always loved Steely Dan, despite feeling like they found their groove with Aja and stopped growing way back when. Their return in the 2000s have given us some really nice albums, but nothing to match Katie Lied and Pretzel Logic and their classics from the 70s. Donald Fagen's albums have been good too, my favorite being the first one from 25 years back, The Nightfly. So when I heard the news that a new one was coming out, it was a no-brainer purchase, checking in on an old acquaintance kind of thing. And Fagen does deliver the goods, no doubt about it. He still disdains non-vintage keys, still uses the melodica for his solos, and a Prophet 5 for textures, same one that he used on the albums back in the 70s, and still writes about old guys lusting after young girls, still has a blues-based approach with a highly evolved harmonic idea and amazing engineering and production values, but is still thoroughly seductive in the output. So maybe he found his style and stopped growing, but not everyone is a Miles Davis. Most artists have a creative arc just like this. That's life, and I'll enjoy him for what he has to offer, which is still pretty formidable. All the early Roman kings. Number 4 is Bob Dylan's Tempest, new album he brought out this year. Continuing with that thought of an artist's career arc, Bob Dylan at 71 still shows more imagination and willingness to stretch than anyone I can think of half his age. These days, he just seems to create with no barriers or second thoughts. What you get could be a mixed bag, and you might not like everything that comes out. But it's intriguing, nevertheless. Some artists are overly repetitive as they age. Others become stereotypes of themselves. Others have nothing to say. They've said it in their youth. But Dylan, who has been guilty in the 90s of the above transgressions, seems to have relaxed and hit his fuck-it mood, to the benefit of us all, really. This is creativity that pours out of a man who has spent his life doing the same thing and moving forward at the same time, at his own pace, in order just not to be bored with his life. He seems to challenge himself. I think that's where the barriers have come down. He just trusts in the moment at this thing, and it's a wonderful thing to hear and see. The hottest pick, I think, on this disc is Early Roman Kings, where he takes an old Muddy Waters lick and pretty much puts a new twist on it. Dylan seems to think this tune is a pretty hot one, too, looking at his set list for the past year. And yeah, I'll go see him anytime I can as he trudges on his endless tour. He has good nights, he has bad nights, but he never seems to have boring nights. And his band kicks big hairy ass on top of it all. One of the best live acts I can recommend these days. The peddlers and the meddlers. I walk up and down the White House. Number 5 is Ry Cooder, Election Special. Protest music always sort of runs the risk of being relevant only in its time of creation. The golden days of early Dylan with his Masters of War, Ballad of Emmett Till, With God on Our Side, and other masterpieces that sent shivers down the spine of this pre-adolescent. And the importance of anthems like We Shall Overcome in the days of the Civil Rights Movement are long over those days. Politicians still suck, and musicians call them out in sporadic fashion only, it seems. Neil Young's album, Living with War, that came out in the mid-2000s, Tom Morello's Rage Against the Machine, and his other projects, they've all come out and have been pretty much found themselves preaching to the choir, as the saying goes. The fans dig them, some converts get into it, but the general reaction tends to be petty and vindictive against them. Witness the media barrage against the Dixie Chicks years ago, for example. Last year, I included Ry Cooder's Pull Up Some Dust and Sit Down on my top 10 list, and said a lot of this then, thinking that Cooder had said his piece about modern politics. So imagine my surprise in the couple months leading up to the 2012 election when Cooder stepped up with this CD. Very personal project recorded on his own with his son and musical protege Joaquin. Cooter was known in the past for performing Woody Guthrie material, and last year's CD showed a return to that approach. But apparently his outrage at the current state of the 99% versus the 1% finally overcame him, must have been growing, and it really inspired him to write these tunes in a mad rush and get them down before the election cycle hit. Opening with Mutt Romney Blues, a witty view of the Republican standard bearer, told from his dog's view from atop the car where he was famously tied down. This CD lambasts the Wall Street gang, the continuing offense of Guantanamo Bay, the hypocrisy of the GOP as they meet for their convention in Tampa, and finally, ending in a demand to leave the Bill of Rights and Constitution alone. This is a brave and fearless confrontation against the man. Not only is it a lyrically scalding piece of work, but Cooter puts some of his most quicksilver guitar and sings in a variety of voices, all capturing the main character of each tune. Cooter understands that lecturing and hectoring the opposition goes nowhere. You've got to seduce your listener into hearing what you're preaching, and this is one of the most seductive attacks on what's wrong in America that I've heard in a generation or more. If you think protest music is dead, give this one a spin, and you'll be surprised how deep the emotion still runs. Number 6 is The Brecker Brothers, The Complete Arista Albums Collection box set. They're putting out a lot of these Sony Legacy things, including Weather Report and Return to Forever and Herbie Hancock and what have you. Putting them out as box sets, which is good, a nice way of getting the entire thing. We don't have much of the artist. So last summer, I'm pulling into the Luzerne County Fair play a gig with Alan Slutsky, Vic Stevens, and Andy Lalasis backing up Bowser from Sha Na Na. My phone suddenly goes off with a message from Bob Ferguson asking if I'm interested in putting together a one-off concert at the Ocean City Library with Vic Stevens and Andy Lalasis and sax player Carl Cox as well, playing a tribute to the Brecker Brothers. I accepted, and so started for me the most fun project I've had in a while. Randy and Michael Brecker were the ubiquitous horn players on every New York session from the mid-70s on. Well-placed enough to open their own club on 7th Avenue South, which became the name of the club, and provide a hang for the hot players of that time, guys like Mike Stern, Jaco Pastorius, Peter Erskine, Don Grolnick, David Sanborn, Eddie Gomez, and a host of others. Their band they put together before going on to form Steps with Mike Maneri was intense and really played over the top, a true fusion of jazz's improv and rock's energy. So this stuff is a blast, and I've been spending a lot of time listening to it, but not so much that it dictates how to approach it and stifles out more modern sensibilities. But it's definitely some of the most influential music in my life this year, so here it is. This set, along with their two GRP releases from the 90s, pretty much sum up all they did, so I'll be living with it for the next year as well. And I got no problem with that. Red rain is coming down. Number 7, Peter Gabriel's Back to Front Tour, 2012, specifically the night in Philadelphia from September the 21st. Peter Gabriel has always been on the edge of new technologies, from the Fairlight sampler in the 80s to the interactive CD Explorer 1 in the 90s. These days he's on to new methods of distribution, using and going beyond the internet. This summer he reassembled the band that had toured behind his album So 25 years ago, and presented the album live in sequenced order as the third part of his concert. first two parts being a series of songs going from unfinished to skeletal versions, an acoustic Shock the Monkey with accordion, and then some electric hits as well. He also recorded every concert in every city that he played and advertised the website from which you could order a 2-CD set of the concert you were witnessing, after which he got involved in the artwork for the series, etc., and finally shipped this out about 6 weeks after the event. Obsessive to the end. The sound quality is impeccable. It's right off the soundboard. And listening to it really does bring back the idiosyncrasies of the concert. The concert was absolutely fantastic. Everybody that was there sort of agreed with that I spoke to. He's still great as a performer and doesn't slight his old fans, going so far as to play a note perfect, The Family and the Fishing Net, from the old Security album, as well as other esoteric tunes. He does his hits, but he also rewards the loyal fans with bits and corners from his past. I'll catch him every time he tours, and I wait for Tony Levin at the Sellersville Theater every time I can as well. These guys really make me believe in live concerts in the 21st century. Number 8, really a category of music more than in one album, but I'll single out Ilya Kaler and the Warsaw Philharmonics, Szymanowski, Violin Concertos Numbers 1 and 2. Playing piano for the Southeast Pennsylvania Symphony gives me the chance to get my yayas out in the classical music realm on a fairly regular basis. In a recent past season, we played the Goreski Symphony No. 3, and I was floored to hear this ghostly music rising all around me, a very unusual, mournful texture. Shortly after that, I saw the movie Shutter Island and heard the soundtrack, consisting of mostly Penn Goreski pieces. One Sunday last year, WRTI stopped their usual Up with Mozart Eternal Festival and played Szymanowski's Violin Concerto No. 2. And I was amazed, not knowing what it was, and rushing to their website to find out what it was, and also to get the impossible spelling of the composer's name right. Since then, I've been checking out 20th century Polish composers and wondering what it was that made them so distinctive and unusual. Lyrical in the extreme, poly and atonal, and really rich in orchestral texture. What's not to like here? Wolfgang, move over. We need to hear more of this stuff. Finally, on my top 10 list, I'm clumping a couple things together here. Number 9 really is two different CDs that sort of work as one piece. Soft Machines, Noisette, and Live at Henny Onstadt Art Center, 1971. Two live albums from the group Soft Machine. And number 10 is Miles Davis's Dark Magus. These last three albums are live artifacts of the two bands I saw back in the early 70s that rocked me way back on my heels and influenced everything I've ever played since that isn't tied to theater or commercial considerations. In this past year, I assembled my doom rig of keyboards after a long period of pondering, designing, and negotiating the sale of former gear for the purchase of new. All this in preparation of playing with a live band again, supporting the upcoming release of my next CD, The Main Squeeze. I've gone back to little themes and tonal centers tied to synth textures and ostinato patterns. And for me, it all starts with Soft Machine and Miles. The two Soft Machine CDs are the best of the slew of live releases that have materialized as this band takes on mythic status in Europe and elsewhere. These are complete concerts that are getting released, so you get the whole effect of the journey they take you on using off-metered ostinato patterns, strange organs and basses through a fuzz box, Rhodes piano, and Coltrane-inspired horn parts, occasionally reeling off into atonal squawk sessions of uncharted territory. I used to take naps as a teenager to Soft Machine's Third, and this stuff sunk in very deep. The Miles Davis CD is a live set with a voodoo funk whatever band he led in 74 and 75. By this time, Miles was playing as much Oberheim OB-8, Bank One Patch One was his favorite, as trumpet. He was playing as much synth as trumpet, wincing from degenerated hip bones and hiding behind the world's largest sunglasses in dark nightclubs. One of my first dates with my wife Lorraine was at Just Jazz in Philly, witnessing this band in action. I can say it really changed my life. This type of music has vanished from the planet. It was incredibly powerful stuff, hated by the jazz establishment at the time, and misunderstood by the rock critics for the most part. But to sit in a close little club and be blown back by the primal force of this music was to emerge into the night different, warped forever, with visions of life's dark and misty possibilities, and all without a vocalist singing lyrics to tell you what the music means. One hypnotic phrase played ad infinitum with strange crackling electronic textures put you in an alpha state that was profound. I miss this stuff dearly and decided to try to go in this direction in some live settings, so I'm working on it, which is why these albums were so influential to me in 2012. Okay, and finally, these were a couple runner-up discs that didn't quite make the top 10 just because I ran out of room more than anything. First one is Rahsaan Roland Kirk, the Warner Brothers Recordings. This is a compilation CD we just happened to find at the Princeton record shop and got home. If you can get past the opening cut, Lunatic Danza, and not have to pause the CD to catch your breath, you're a better man than me. Put this on, turn off the world, and try to picture this man in front of you making these divine noises in real time. How did he do it? This is a really good compilation of Kirk's Warner Brothers tracks, one of those albums you never see around, won't hear on the radio, and you find it only by happy accident. But it's worth seeking out, very definitely. Next up, as a runner-up, is the Beach Boys' latest one, That's Why God Made the Radio. The remaining Beach Boys got together for a 50th anniversary tour and came up with this album as an excuse to go out on the road. How good could it be? Only their best release since Surf's Up, I think. Listen to the angelic choirs that open the album and then glide into the title cut, a summer ditty that will put a smile on the face of the most nihilistic atheist despite themselves. This is so good that Brian Wilson interrupted his solo career to pursue this, only to have Mike Love fire the band before the tour was even over, leaving everyone involved confused beyond words. Mike Love's loss, by the way. I shared a green room with him in Branson, Missouri one afternoon and witnessed how he made everyone in the place regard him with thinly veiled loathing within 5 minutes of his imperial entrance. The band may be gone for good. Hey, Carl and Dennis have been dead for a long time anyway, so is it really a reunion? But if nothing else, Brian Wilson provided one hell of a finale with this release. Try it, you can't help but like it. Next up is CeeLo Green, The Lady Killer. I won't even know about the CD without the intervention of my son Miles. He knows good stuff when he hears it. If someone else would have told me that I'd be enamored of a disc by an ex-rapper whose biggest hit is entitled Fuck You, I would have gone out of my way to avoid it. But I gotta admit, I would have been wrong. This guy sings fantastically and writes great stuff. Real R&B out of the blue, making me feel like here's another genre that's not quite dead yet. More. And lastly, The Move, live at the Fillmore 1969. The British bands that invaded the U.S. in the late 60s made a lasting impression. In addition to The Who, The Stones, Cream, Traffic, and The Kinks, and a host of others, there were other lesser knowns that had had British hits or were known from previous bands. Some of them, like Jeff Beck, rose in prominence and made lasting albums. Others, like Family and The Move, had very limited tours here and never broke through, even though they may have had their moments of incredible brilliance. I always loved The Move and their studio albums Shazam, Message from the Country, and Looking On. I never even knew they had graced our shores, but these two nights at the Fillmore West show them recreating the bombast that made their sparse instrumentation sound like an orchestra. I don't think this is going to win over any converts, but spent a lot of time in my car CD player as a guilty pleasure all summer long. So that's it. 2012's most influential picks for me. As always, please respond. Write to david@davehartle.com and I'll append your additions to the PDF that you see here on the site for this year. I hope you enjoyed this and see you next year. Don't know where to go, but I can't see a thing to open my eyes. Can't see a thing to open my eyes.